Recording is on.
All right. Recording is on. Okay. So let me start over. We are all here to learn and participate in this community. And that means that in order for us to be successful at that, we have to adhere to a code of ethics and professional conduct. If you'd like to read more about that, the link to the W3C's code of conduct is in the agenda. I think that I appreciate the way that this group respects and engages with one another. The IP note, we welcome, I think most, as I'm looking through, I see a lot of familiar faces today. But yes, if you are not a part of the, officially part of the CCG, we're super glad you're here. And hopefully, if you want to begin contributing more, actively, that you will go ahead and join the W3C and sign the contributor license agreement. Links to that can also be found in the agenda. We keep a recording and minutes from this meeting so that we can have it for the future to go back and reference, to be able to keep kind of a historical view of what we've been doing. And so we use Jitsi to record those meetings. And if you want to participate, we follow a queue format. So you can add yourself to the queue by typing Q plus. If there's something that you would like to discuss, and we certainly hope that you will ask questions and be an engaged participant in the conversation today. Now it's time for introductions and reintroductions. Is there anybody here who would like to put themselves on the queue and introduce themselves? All right. Well, the next section of the agenda is announcements and reminders. Before I turn it over to the queue, I'll go ahead and take this opportunity to share my own announcement, which is that next week's CCG meeting is going to be an open format meeting. We're going to talk about work items. We're going to talk about the things we might want to accomplish in 2024. So I'd invite you to, one, make sure that people attend and that we really have a representation of everybody who's a part of this community. And two, that you think about the things that are important to you and bring and come to that meeting prepared to share those things. I really am going to be hoping that we can get, that the session can be more of a brainstorming, put everything out on the table, and then we'll work together on the list and in a subsequent meeting to kind of refine that. But really, I think of this as a true open meeting, and hopefully that will plant some seeds in your mind. Okay, so now over to the queue, Kalia.
Hi, I just wanted to share that for the Internet Identity Workshop, super early bird registration is closing at the end of this week. So if you want to get a super cheap ticket, now is your chance. The conference is April 16 to 18 at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else with an announcement or reminder? All right. How about anything related to work items? Is there anything we need to discuss as a community or reminders or updates? All right. Well, with that, I have finished going through housekeeping, and it is my pleasure to turn it over to Jack and let him go through his presentation, and then we can have a discussion at the end. Jack, the floor is yours.
Cool. Thanks, Kayla. Let me
not turn my video on, but I will share my screen. Cool. So today I've been invited by Harrison and the GIF community to give a bit of an overview and an update of what's going on with the DID extension standard called conditional proofs. And this was, the standard was created and implemented in the DIF libraries. So just a bit of an introduction. I'm a identity blockchain decentralized engineer. I've been working for 7 years now. And I'm now the CTO of the Autonomy Foundation. We're currently building we have built a fully self-sovereign digital identity wallet, which we're offering as a white labeled service, and moving towards a SaaS platform with a free digital identity wallet, which we're calling a passport. So if you want to know more about myself or the foundation, what we're up to, feel free to come check us out. I will be putting a link to these slides when I finish talking, so that there's no big secret reveals. So today what I'm going to go through is basically what we've done, why it can be used, what it is, the spec itself, and then a bit about how we implemented into the DIDJWT library, some of those implementation characteristics, and then a look at where it's now been adopted and what would be nice next steps after that. So what we've done is we've implemented the conditional proof standard. It was a standard developed through the W3C CCG while I was working at a company called Gimli. And since then, through the Autonomy Foundation, myself and some of the other contributors at the foundation, Rebel, who's not here, and Sadia, who is here in this call, have implemented this in the DIF libraries in DIDJWT, the DID Resolver, and the DIDJWT VC. So that was a big piece of work. And what this standard does is it supports signatures and signature verification for multi-signature. That's one of N, M of N, or weighted N of M multi-signature. It supports delegated signatures. It supports showing relationships between different signatures. So maybe one is a parent of another. And then it's also a recursive structure. So it supports combinations and recursions of those above three characteristics. So what can this be used for? You can use for quite a few interesting things. For a single user kind of scenario, you can use it for multi-factor authentication. So you can have cryptographically provable biometric plus PIN, or you can have multiple keys sign a single VC, for example, and you can show what those different keys are for. So you can have two signatures of one verifiable credential. This, as a core DID technology, also supports DIDCOM at the moment. I think they're the main two applications at the moment, so having multiple signatures of DIDCOM messages or verifiable credential. I think because of the nature of DIDCOM, because it's more transient, we're not going to see so much use of this in DIDCOM, much more in verifiable credentials, but still it can be done. You can also have a good use case is having multi-device support, so a single user having multiple keys of different devices of theirs, of their phone, of their laptop, of their tablet. Maybe you can also do this something with sensors along a similar line. That's using the multi-party signatures. More obvious with the multi-party signatures is you can have multiple people sign a document, a VC. So maybe you have multiple people approve a document. That could be two, an employee and an employer approving a new employee contract, for example. Or maybe you have all of the current board of directors, or maybe a threshold of them approving a new board member, something like this, to the current articles of association. Then it can also support delegated authorizations. So this would be where you have one DID delegating to another DID, and saying, this other DID can sign on behalf of this DID for this particular capacity. So this can be used, for example, having authorization within a company or a DAO authorizes that this particular document can be signed by this employee. You can also use it to kind of create conglomerations or consortium kind of agreements where you have multiple companies or DAOs, each with a DID, and they can all sign a document together through a consortium kind of company with a DID that delegates the capacity to sign that document to all of the separate entities that have joined it. Maybe just want to check, are those kind of use cases clear to everyone? Why multi-signatures and delegated authorizations can be useful? Great. A thumbs up's good. I will move on. Sometimes silent means gets it. So, thanks for the thumbs up. So when we first wrote the standard, and I'll show you the standard in a moment, we had these five specific blockchains and protocols in mind that could adopt it. And now, as I'm aware, there's one other DID method that can also adopt this standard as well. So three of these have now adopted the standard, so that's pretty exciting. So let me show you what this standard looks like. You can find it here. It did have the previous name was Verifiable Creditions, but because the acronym VC clashes so much with Verifiable Credentials, we changed it to Conditional Proof. So that'll redirect you. Anyway, Conditional Proof Standard is a verification method type, right? And here is a DID document that is implementing the Conditional Proof Standard. What you can see here is it is a type of the first verification method here. So instead of it being the normal cryptographic verification method like you see here, this is the Bitcoin or Ethereum SECP 256K1, and here's the Edwards code verification key. These are the normal ones you normally see in a verification method. This is a new type that allows you to compose these methods together. So on this particular example, this verification method, instead of having a key requirement, it has a condition requirement. And the condition is you have to present both of the following conditions in order to satisfy the signature. And you can see the first requirement is another the first requirement is another conditional proof type. So this is showing the recursiveness of it. So within the AND condition, there's a sub OR condition. You can see that here. And in that AND condition, the second condition is a regular Edwards curve signature type. So within the OR condition, then this says you need to present us a signature that matches one of the two here, so an OR condition. So you can see the recursiveness here. It supports all of the existing verification method types. That's the Blake signatures, the Edwards curve, the SECP curves, RSA, whatever existing condition types are all supported in this. And this just adds the recursive conditional types to it. So this is the different properties you can get on the verification method type. So we just saw condition and condition OR. You can also create a condition threshold. This would this has to be also presented with a threshold value. So this is where you can show an N of M signature. Or you can do a weighted condition threshold. This would be a weighted N of M. What that means is, for example, I might have a weight of 2, Bob has a weight of 1, and Rachel has a weight of 3, and you need a collective weight of 5 for this to pass, for example. So each of the different signatures in it, or recursive signatures, have their own weight as well. You have condition delegated. This delegates to a separate did, and also specifies the verification method on that did that needs to be satisfied to pass the proof. Then there's 3 other types which show different relationships between verification methods. This can be useful to show wallets, you know, some kind of hierarchy within keys or conditions that may need to be met by protocols or documents in order for them to be accepted. So you've got parent, child, and sibling to show hierarchies. I don't think we're going to get into this. This is quite an old decision. We decided when we went forward with this, we decided to implement this in the DJWT library. And you can have a look at the reasons there. At the time, it was a very well-supported library, as it still is now. I think the other decision was to use the what's the main JSON LD one? That's through Digital Bazaar. I think they were the 2 hot contenders for this. So I'm going to explain a little bit about the way we implemented it. So the DID JWT library is obviously using the JWT standard to represent a signed piece of data. And for the conditional proof, you need to actually show multiple signatures potentially on one piece of data. So the way we did that is that we used the existing JWT standard, which supports a recursive signature structure. And the way that it does that is in the header of the JWT, you simply put a new field, CTY, and you put that as JWT. And that says this is actually a recursive JWT, and that the payload actually contains another JWT within it. And so you can recurse this down as many times as you want and create as many signatures on one JWT payload. So the next part after we figured out how to actually show multiple signatures within the JWT, the question was, how do we implement this in the DID JWT library? So this is how the DigiWT library looked before, and this is afterwards. I suspect this hasn't changed too much. Basically, there's a big function, verify JWT, that first decodes the JWT, that parses the package out. It then resolves the issuer into the DID document. And then it starts decoding the document. Basically, it jumps in, decodes it, finds the algorithm, assuming that it's, so in this case, the algorithm was always a key verification. And then it jumps into whichever key verification it needs to do. So what we did is we made this into a recursive structure to, optionally recursive, to reflect the recursiveness of conditional proofs. Basically here in the decode JWT, it would optionally be able to recurse through this JWT to pull out all of the signatures so that it could compare them when it started doing signature verification. Then when it got to the verifying the JWT, the decoded JWS, it would look at the type. And if it was the regular type, so not a conditional proof, then it would go into the normal algorithm. And if it was a conditional proof, there are a bunch of new functions that would figure out how to evaluate if the proof was satisfied. And these are all, as you can see, based on these types here. So based on these, it would determine whether the condition was met. Now, of course, as you saw, this is recursive. So sometimes when it got to these conditions, it might go and find two new verification methods. So it has to go back to this function and recurses through this again. And that way it creates the recursive structure that's needed for this. So some of the characteristics of this is it's obviously using the DidJWT library. It is DidVC and JWT standard compliant. That also means it can be used for the JSON-LD proofs because the JWS proof is supported as part of that, but it can't be used for the full LD proofs if you're not using the JWS proof type. I think there's a really nice video about smart signatures by Christopher Allen. It's a great video. And just evaluating it using his metrics for smart signatures, it is composable using the recursive conditions, which is part of the standards. It's very inspectable. You can look at a DID document, you can look at a signature, and you can figure out if it's verifiable. It's provable every time, it's deterministic every time. It's theoretically bounded if you add those limits, which is not currently added to DidJWT. So if somebody was to create some kind of recursive loop, so maybe delegating one DID to another and then backwards, you might actually get to an infinite loop at the moment. So that's not implemented here yet. So that probably would be a good addition to add a recursion limit or a time limit to the verification. And then in terms of efficiency, basically it adds a small overhead each time it has to find goes through a condition. The signature verification isn't affected, so it's only logical gate conditions. So it's pretty efficient. I can't remember how I watched this video a long time ago. I can't remember exactly how he defines this, but it's fairly efficient. Depends on the number of conditions you have, of course. And I suspect for many applications, you don't get a crazy amount of conditions needed. Right, so as I said, there are now three DIDs that have implemented this. That's the Antelope DID, the Kerry DID, though I would note the specification hasn't been updated, but I've been told the Kerry DID itself, the implementation, does now have conditional proof in it. And then the DID WebS is now also supporting this. The DID JWT library has this implemented inside of it. And that also means that the Vercel library, which is a very popular modular library for everything in decentralized identity, is also using this and therefore supports it as well. In terms of further adoption, I think having this implemented in JSON-LD libraries would be good, and I think more adoption in DID methods is good. It adds a lot of flexibility to wallet management and identity management, having these kinds of tools. The alternative, if you don't use this, is basically have a different DID for every single key. And when you start implementing conditional proof, you start getting much simpler DIDs. You can have one DID controlling lots of things within it, and the identity behind it stays the same. That is all. Does anyone have any questions? I think Dimitri is saying their verifiable governance works using this space spec as well. Maybe Dimitri, you want to say something about that?
Oh, sure. I think a couple months ago, I did a presentation here at the CCG on verifiable governance, and that work uses the verifiable condition spec. So it was we found it very useful.
Cool.
That said, since you mentioned delegation, I don't think that multi-signature alone should be used to implement delegation. since it's layering business logic over a data integrity layer, but it's definitely a useful tool in delegation and similar operations.
Yeah. So in the spec, you can do delegation in two ways, I guess. You can have it as a multi-sig, so you can give the other party the other keys that you put on your verification method. The other way of doing it is actually through a delegated, so it actually links one did to another. And I'm not sure if this is what you're implying, Dimitri. I think that's a bit more of a composable way of having this, if you link dids together. And then they can control their did, and you just delegate to them. So that's also supported in this standard in the recursive way.
Nice, yeah. Quick question. So do you intend to continue with the spec? Like, is there interest to maintain it? Seems useful.
Yeah, I mean, we're heavily using this spec in our autonomy activities and operations. WebS is just using it, and I think that is starting to attract a lot of interest. So it really does start with supporting the DIDs. That's where it starts, and we're starting to see traction with that. Carrie and WebS, I think, just implemented it within the last couple of months. And then you go on to how you apply it after you have it in the DID. So I would say this interest, the standard itself, I haven't had any requests for changes or anything like that. I would say, like I said, next thing is more DID adoption and then more library support.
Hey, no. I have a question. This is cool. I like it simple, right? Like, you don't use complicated cryptography. You, like, encode the logic of multi-signature into the DID spec, and then it's evaluated through some software, right? But have you considered, you know, potentially in future work supporting more advanced cryptographic schemes like Schnorr signatures, where the kind of logic of multi-sig is in the key? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's a different approach that has some different properties. Like you said, this is simple. It's just conditional logic. Schnorr's is, yeah, more cryptography based. I think that, yeah, I think maybe has different security properties probably.
Do you imagine that would then potentially be a completely separate spec?
Is Schnorr's a supported verification method type at the moment?
I think there'd be a lot of, I'm not sure. I think it's not well supported in the DID world, yeah.
Yeah, it could be. I would see it as another verification method type, and then you could even use both of these together as well.
Because this reminds me quite a lot of, like, Bitcoin. You know, in Bitcoin world, before they included Schnorr, they had the logic in the script, and then you stuck all the signatures on the stack and evaluated it. But now they're kind of moving towards Schnorr, where you have like a multi.
You're saying Schnorr's, not Shamir's secret sharing.
Schnorr signatures allows you to take like three public keys and aggregate them into a single public key, such that you could create a signature that verifies against that multi-sig public key by aggregate three signatures from a single public key.
I thought you were talking about Shamir's secret sharing. I'm not actually aware of this cryptography, so can't comment on that one. Sounds cool, though.
Yeah, it's cool.
Any other questions for Jeff? Comments, ways that you're using this?
Is anyone more compelled to, you know, just for our collective reference, interested or compelled to maybe adopt this in their DID methods they're using or applications?
I'm just curious in the syntax for specifying it, it's basically using embedded verification methods, is it possible to do by reference so that you don't have to repeat the ID type controller information in the condition?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, indeed, these could be DID URLs to other verification methods within the same DID document. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like in the same usage where verification relationships can be by reference or basically embedded, these could be by reference as well, you're saying?
Yeah, that's in the standard. And I know it's in the standard. I think it's in the implementation. I've also just put a link to these slides in the chat.
Thanks, Jack. How about any other questions? Is anyone using this already? Or as Jack was asking, think this is making you interested about adding it?
Maybe just an emoji, just see what a...
I would guess just comment. We do have in the work being done at TBD around the decentralized web nodes and the DHT method that we're standardizing. We have use for delegated signatures for the multi-device purpose case, basically to protect, you know, against the compromise of a DICE not basically leaking your root private keys, and there's some delegated DID that has lesser permissions. And so I think in that context, there's some overlap. And so it's interesting to do a little more reading on this and see what the utility might be to encode that information directly in the document.
Cool.
Anyone else? Thoughts? Questions?
Yes, I mean, I can tell that you guys are not aware. Sorry, go ahead, Frank.
I was just going to ask, is there a formal spec doc for this? I was looking at the GitHub repo, and it's still kind of like a work in progress, it looks like.
This guy, this is the formal spec. So I've just copied some of this stuff into the slide so I didn't have to come here, but this is the spec. And maybe I could update the implement. Yeah. Then the implementations are in the DigitOT library and now using the Vercel, and then those three DIDs. And using it.
Harrison.
Yeah, so going off a little tangent, but I'm just curious if anyone, maybe Will knows, is that the difference between like Shamir secret sharing versus Schnorr like cryptography, like what's the difference between like aggregated signatures versus like distributed key generations?
You're asking me. I think the difference is, in this example, you can see in the DID document, if it's a 3 of 3 multisig, you have to define 3 public keys. In the Schnorr-based method, you potentially would only need to define 1 public key that encapsulates the logic of it being a 3 of 3 multisig. And that's maybe good or bad, right? Like maybe there's better privacy. You don't know the keys of the individual signers, but maybe it's also bad because you want to know, okay, these are the keys of these are the bids of the individual signers. This is
would that aggregated piece of information tell you that it's a 1 of 3 or a 3 of 3, or would it just tell you like how much meta information would it tell you?
The key itself would just be a key, like you'd have to add the meta information.
It intentionally does not.
You have the key there. It doesn't tell you that this is three keys.
The key, the public key would look like any other public key. You wouldn't be able to distinguish it from a one of one or.
Yeah, it's intentionally
maybe
doing
that
for
has
privacy and efficiency.
Sounds good for privacy, but maybe it's a bit less inspectable.
Yeah,
thinking about characteristics.
Yeah, I think the way, if you wanted it to be inspectable, right, you would include the three public keys as well, and then people would be able to self-generate the aggregated key.
Yeah. Nice. I was just going to say in, Tonomy, I think our main use case for this, what we're doing is using this for provable multi-factor. So showing that something was signed by a user's root key and their biometric key on a document. We're using it for multi-party signatures. And I think eventually probably using it to delegate authorization within DAOs to people, employees.
I actually have another question, which is about the size of the signatures, right? Like, obviously the size of the signatures is going to grow exponentially, well, grow with every time, right? They're going to get bigger every time you add a new signature. The payload is going to be larger.
Yeah, so there's two overhead. So it obviously grows linearly with the number of signatures you add with this. There's a JWT overhead, like the headers and metadata. And then there's also a base64 overhead, which is about 30%. So it does grow linearly and then has some overhead on it, this structure.
Harrison.
Yeah, Jack, I'm just curious, like, do you mind going to the use case of MFA, like multi-factor authentication, a little bit more? Like, why do you need multi-signatures in MFA? Like, is it just one signature per factor, per authentication factor? And if so, like, in what situations do you need this? Yeah.
On the solutions we're deploying for clients, each person has one DID, and in that DID, they get different keys associated with different security and usability trade-offs. So we give each user what we call a local key, which doesn't have any challenges associated with it. We give them a PIN key. We give them a biometric key, which is associated with biometric challenges on their phone. And so just the simple case, each user has three keys. They log into an application that wants proof that they signed it on their device, which is the local key, and they went through a biometric challenge. That's the biometric key. So then this MFA, we can create a proof that says they satisfy the condition of having both of those signatures when they sign a document or something, PDF, a VC.
Got it. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jack. This was great, and really appreciate you taking the time to come and share this update with us. And everybody, a reminder that next week will be an open agenda. So do be thinking about ideas. I think I already, percolated one from Kalia, who sent me a paper to read. So if you have things, that's the other thing. If you have things that you think this community should be reading, I would love for those, you to bring those ideas too. Anything and everything is on the table next week. So I think with that, I'll give everyone back a few minutes in their hour. Again, thanks, Jack. Thanks, everyone, with your questions. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for the nice questions as well. Bye.